Go Loud.
I just like the idea of, you know, time has come, Mr. President. Just for whatever reason.
Former Health Minister Robin Swan, who is the exact same height as Michael D. Higgins, said, "He looks like a man I could look in the eye."
They just managed votes. They gave old people lifts to polling stations. And by they, I mean my father.
Hello everybody, and welcome to this special bonus episode of A Few Scoops, when we will discuss all things presidency, from Douglas Hyde to Mary Robinson. We are going to talk about our favourite presidents, our favourite presidential moments, but right now we are going to give a quick rundown of what's happened this week. I want to start with some very lovely news that although the vote will be held on Friday, the first votes cast in the presidential election took place on Tuesday when 101-year-old Moira McCafferty, a resident in St. Joseph's Nursing Home in Killargan, cast her vote.
Yeah.
Moira apparently was ready and waiting when the ballot box arrived at the Mid-Kerry facility last Saturday, and she was proud to cast her vote as she is a firm believer in the importance of picking the right candidate for the job.
That's great.
Well done, Moira. Love to see it. And if anyone wants to see a picture of Moira, it is in the Irish Independent.
So she's 101
She has a little dog.
Oh.
Yeah, it looks like a golden retriever.
1924. So she could have voted in the first time. In the 40s.
Yeah.
Imagine if she just scrawls "not my president" across the ballot paper.
She voted for John Gavin. Yeah. So in the last number of weeks, we have had, I feel like there's been a lot of debates.
Yeah.
Do you know what I think it is? Because there's only two candidates, it feels like there's loads of debates. When there's more candidates, you don't notice it as much. But because it's only two people going head to head, it feels like there's loads of it.
I would compare it to the number of Premiership games on around Christmas. You just lose track. And there's like, oh, there was another game on the other week. So there have been mainly radio, isn't it?
Mainly radio, yeah. We do have the prime time debate this week as well. So the two big themes so far have been Heather Humphreys has been accused of Trump-like politics, that she is now claiming that during Catherine Connolly's work as a barrister, she represented the banks when they were repossessing people's homes during the crash. And she said that this smacks of hypocrisy. Catherine Connolly was elected to Galway Council at the time as a left-wing candidate, and she should have been more open about the fact that she worked for the banks. Catherine Connolly has had a bizarre intervention with the Justice Minister standing up for her and saying there is a cab rank rule for barristers and that she doesn't have a choice.
I love the metaphor of the cab rank rule for barristers. I like the idea of them all sitting around an enormous garage, kind of smoking, wisecracking. Hey, Tony, this one's for you. And like them just not being able to avoid certain customers.
Like the whole thing about the working for the banks is that there is no choice. And this is a Fine Gael tactic. So when the last time we had this argument was in 2020 during the election, when Fine Gael went after Jim O'Callaghan because he represented Gerry Adams as a barrister. We have had the Bar Council of Ireland has come out and basically said everyone,
that well-known nest of wokeness.
Everyone is due legal representation, and barristers have to represent their clients to the best of their ability, or then they will be taken up and investigated. Heather Humphreys has made much of her time as head of a credit union. Credit unions have also made repossessions, and also in her maiden speech when she was in the Dáil, she argued for more powers for credit unions without mentioning the fact that she ran a credit union. I think this type of thing isn't going to sway the Irish public one way or another. I think in the last number of days, it has gotten increasingly toxic. I think, you know, there's been a lot made of Heather Humphreys, her time as a minister, and the TD for Monaghan. There has been a case mentioned in the death of Shane O'Farrell and what she did and didn't do there. And I do have concerns at times that families of victims, and we have seen this in other instances when it comes to Sinn Féin and the IRA, but families of victims are wheeled out and used, and I'm not claiming at all that the Catherine campaign or the Fine Gael campaign are doing this, but the media and the attention tends to go to these families.
Hmm.
And then when the election is over, these families fade back into the background, yeah. And I don't think it's very fair on them.
Like, there's somebody who was in a centre of an eviction case is being featured on the front of a paper today. It fits into whatever narrative you want. There wasn't anything about them previously. Mm-hmm. It seems like if the race was tighter, would these things be coming out? If the race was about what kind of Ireland do you want to see, what kind of president would you be? These things probably wouldn't be coming out as much. I don't know.
Yeah, and just to say about the race being tighter, so the latest poll showed that Catherine Conley was 18 points ahead of Heather Humphreys. However, 49% of the respondents said they did not feel represented by either candidate this time round. The survey also indicated that 18% of voters were undecided, 12 would not vote, and 6 would spoil their vote. We know that the presidential election generally has a very low turnout, and my concern has been, since Jim Gavin dropped out, that in a race where people don't turn out to vote in very high numbers, I feel like even less people are going to turn out because men are not going to come out to vote for two women.
Okay, I don't know. I'll have to ask them.
Go and speak to the men and see what they say.
I will. I'm having a meeting with them later, the men of the country, and we'll see what our plan is.
As always, as I've mentioned every week, I have previously done some paid work for Catherine Conley as a media and press strategist. I am not paid by her to speak about her on this podcast, and I'm not going to tell you to vote for her, but I would ask that you go out and use your vote on Friday. Vote for the candidate who you think would be best at the job. People fought and died for your vote, and you should do everything you can to use it.
Mm-hmm. And maybe mightn't be the candidate that you would... It's the candidate you feel would be best to do the job at hand. They mightn't represent you or your views, but it's a job that has certain skills. So,
and as we said last week, they'll both be grand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both these women are incredibly capable. I think the public are quite annoyed at how toxic the race has gotten in recent days. And I actually don't think it's the fault of either woman.
Okay.
So, I've asked Colin this week to talk about our favourite presidents, most interesting presidents, and things that we didn't know from a quick Google. So, I'm going to start with our very first president because I didn't know anything about him. In school, in the North, we don't actually learn that much about presidents. I obviously know about Eamon de Valera and a few others. But our first president, Douglas Hyde, was a Protestant.
Yes, the first of two and three, depending on the result.
Yeah, so Douglas Hyde was a Roscommon man. He was an Irish language academic, linguist, and he was the president of the Gaelic League and one of the most influential cultural organisations in Ireland at the time. He had some controversy when, in the 1925 Shannon election, the Catholic Truth Society opposed him for his Protestantism. And publicised his supposed support for divorce.
Wow.
Those Protestants, up to no good as usual.
A man ahead of his time.
Yeah, so his fans included the Taoiseach, Eamon de Valera, and leader of the opposition, W.T. Cosgrave. They both wanted a president with universal prestige to lend credibility because it was a new office. They liked his promotion of the Irish language, and both of them wanted a non-Catholic to disprove the assertion that the state was a confessional state or a Catholic state, as it was described in the 1937 Constitution. So it was actually because he was a Protestant.
Mm.
Both the opposition and the government wanted him to be president.
Utter woke nonsense there from the early 30s.
A DEI hire.
Yeah. And he found Conor na Gaeilge, the Gaelic League, in 1893? My grandfather was a travelling Irish teacher
The
early 1900s at Timmera.
At Timmera, that's right.
So he would have been, and he probably knew him. He used to translate books. So this is like when Irish was like a national mission before it became, Peg was terrible in the Leaving Cert.
So in 1938, about a year under his term, Douglas Hyde attended a soccer match between Ireland and Poland at Daly Mount Park, which is now the home of Bose. The GAA banned their members from attending foreign games like soccer and expelled Douglas Hyde from GAA matches because he went to Daly Mount, which I think is a totally fair punishment for anyone who chooses to go to Daly Mount. But apparently...
They've done it up since.
Yeah. But he did not respond. He just took it on the chin and never responded to the GAA.
This goes to show the sheer chutzpah of the GAA to expel a president.
The president. I know.
Yeah, we are bigger than any country.
Okay, what's your fun facts or notable moments?
Generally, the presidency doesn't have too much controversy. They can't get into too much bother. But one did resign because he was dissed. Yeah, Carúl O'Dolig in late October 1976. So one of the things a president can do is refer bills to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that they are deciding on the bills. They're just like, I'm not sure about this.
They want to check whether it's constitutionally sound.
Yeah, and Carúl O'Dolig did this to refer the Emergency Powers Bill. So
Is that the Special Criminal Court?
Yes. So this was after the murder of the British ambassador, Christopher Ewart Biggs. And in the end, there was nothing unconstitutional, according to the Supreme Court, but the government were really pissed off about it. And the defence minister, Paddy Donegan, at an army function in Mullingar, went off on one and he described the president as a thundering disgrace.
That's not the full quote, though.
Oh, what's the full quote?
Oh, the thing I read was that the full quote was... The actual words were a thunder and bollocks and a fucking disgrace.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm in the Irish Times here, so they probably censored that out.
No, it's there. I have Irish Times as well. We must be looking at
different article.
Stories.
Okay.
Yeah. Donegan's actual words were a thunder and bollocks and a fucking disgrace.
I was interested in the choice of swearing. Could you be...
A thunder and bollocks is a fantastic insult.
Could you be a fucking bollocks and a thundering disgrace? But anyway, interesting. So I don't know whether... That version of it went to Carúl O'Dolig or whether it was a piece of paper with like black lines
and the word refucking dacted.
And so Paddy Donegan apologised, but it was sort of wasn't apology enough. Or Carúl O'Dolig was so insulted that basically there was a vote of confidence in Paddy Donegan in the Dáil. He was backed and therefore not sacked.
Mm-hmm.
So Carúl O'Dolig resigned.
Fair play to him.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fairly hefty resignation. But that's the kind of stuff, by and large, people used to resign over. It feels almost quaint.
I don't know. There's a big bang of desperation off everybody. Now nobody ever resigns.
Yeah. job's a job.
So I wanted to mention, I think, and this isn't even my own bias of being a rabid feminist, but I do think when you say Irish president to most people, the three, and obviously they're the three most recent, but the three they always mention are Michael D. Higgins, Mary Robinson, and Mary McAleese. Probably Mary Robinson more than Mary McAleese. I think she's had a more lasting impact, and it was such a seismic thing at the time for Ireland to elect a woman in 1990. Just to bring it home, one of the big moves that Mary Robinson made. She was seen as an intellectual. She was seen as like a bit snobby. However,
austere.
And in 1993, when we were in the throes of trying to cobble together a peace process, I very much so at 2 years old. But I wrote about this in my book. Mary Robinson shook hands with Gerry Adams.
That's right. Yeah.
It was in front of all the papers from here, there and everywhere. There was huge outrage from unionists and people in the Republic alike. And she said after it was a handshake, not a policy, but it did very much normalise negotiations along with people like John Hume.
Well, it was a binary moment because if she hadn't shook his hand, then that would also have been a statement.
Exactly. It is. And she said, you know, it's a handshake, not a policy. But what it did was open the door for normalisation of talks like what John Hume with Gerry Adams and made way, some small way, towards the peace process.
Like it was a huge deal. Like in 1990, it's the Italian 90 of politics, not just because it was 1990. Fianna Fáil just didn't lose those kind of elections.
Yeah.
They didn't lose those kind of referendums, you know, because in effect it was a referendum on status quo or somebody new.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the Labour candidate. So that's
Labour also do very well.
Yeah, they do very well.
Presidential elections, big with the vibes.
But there was no Sinn Féin bloc backing her, if you know what I mean.
Like, no,
Sinn Féin didn't exist in the same sense as a Southern party. With
they didn't recognise at all.
Yeah, they didn't get 20% of the vote in elections or opinion polls. And like Fianna Fáil, they would had only grudgingly admitted at that stage that they would probably need another party in government. Because they had a minority government, I think, in 87.
Fianna Fáil have had to be part of coalition governments since the hunger strikers died in 1981.
But the extent to which they dominated, like in the constituency I'm from, they ran four candidates 1 year. Like they just gave it a go.
They were one of the most successful electoral movements in Europe.
Yeah, they just managed votes. They gave old people lifts to polling stations. And by they, I mean my father.
It's okay, Sinn Féin do that in the north.
Yeah, but it's that kind of middle management, that sort of grassroots, just politics is a logistics game as much as an ideological game. So when she won, and like her barristering was in the area of decriminalising homosexuality, she was involved in contraception. So liberal stuff that would have put people's backs up. So it was huge. And
she was also insulted regularly in the media and by all her politicians because she was a woman when she ran.
And we said this before, it was Pádraig Flynn helped her by alleging that she had newfound interest
in her children
since the election campaign started.
Most people would forget about their children running for an election.
Yeah. So it was a big deal. And what's more, so they talk about Brian Lennon. So Brian Lennon had his thing. Brian Lennon Sr.
Give us the timeline. When was Brian Lennon?
Brian Lennon Sr. was a minister in Haughey's government, Fianna Fáil royalty, and he was going to be the candidate, and he was a shoo-in because he was solid, or, you know, effectively part dyed-in-the-wool, common touch, but also one of the big beasts of Fianna Fáil. The thing that got him into trouble was he said, I didn't phone the president in the early 80s to try and influence him about how the next government should be formed. So what happens, for anybody not familiar, one of the things the president does is he dissolves the Dáil or not dissolves the Dáil. He calls the parliament.
That's what we call the election.
Yeah, that means an election can be called. So a coalition collapsed. A Garrett Fitzgerald asked Paddy Hillary, end the Dáil, let's have an election. And then Brian Lennon rang Paddy Hillary and said,
the president. So a TD.
A TD rang the president.
Yeah.
To say, hang on a second there, Paddy, who we worked together in the 70s. Will you give Charlie Haughey a go at forming a government? Which is generally something you shouldn't do, I would imagine.
And then it became worse because then he lied and said the phone call never happened.
Never happened. But he'd said it to a student, a journalism student called Jim Duffy, who had the tapes. And then when confronted with this, he said, on mature recollection, actually the thing I said, I was wrong.
Didn't happen.
But the thing was, people forget that he won the first preferences and the scandal emerged and then there was a shafting of him. And so he got sympathy vote. Oh. So the timing of the scandal wasn't like that week so that his vote collapsed. He got 40-something percent of the vote.
Yeah, because Mary Robinson was behind, but it was the second preferences
from decent man Austin Curry, who was kind of half-arsed, campaigned for by Fine Gael with their notorious presidential election campaign record. But that's sometimes stuff happens that's seismic in a slightly inglorious way as well. That's politics. Aoife, regardless of who's elected, this election has been about everything but what the president can and can't do. What can they definitely do and what can they get into trouble for?
So everything the president can do is described in the Constitution. Most of the powers that the president has can only be exercised on the advice of the government. So if he wants or she wants to address the Houses of the Oireachtas or address a message to the nation on national or public importance, the president then has to ask the government. The only areas of discretion that the president has are, though, as we already discussed, referring a bill to the Supreme Court for a judgment on the constitutionality or in refusing to dissolve the Dáil. Despite what you will read on social media, they do not write laws or set laws. They cannot refuse laws if they don't like them. they can doubt their constitutionality, and that's when they would refer to the Supreme Court.
And they have people around them called the Council of State, which sounds like in Star Wars, just a lot of people around the glowing table.
Yeah, it is kind of like Star Wars. So it's basically a gang of people that the president thinks would be helpful for him to consult with. And this is also specified in the Constitution. So there are usually former office holders, and you'd have like former Taoiseach, Chief Justice, President of the Court of Appeal, and then appointed members. And they can be from all different walks of life. So currently on the Council of State, Ciara Ostenberg, who is an environmental scientist, is on it. Cindy Joyce, Dr. Cindy Joyce, actually, who is a traveller woman. And Sinead Burke, who is a disability activist, is currently on it as well. So the president appoints some of these people as a body to give him advice. They also have the authority to temporarily carry out the duties of the president if the president cannot do it himself.
Can the Council of State, can they do a coup?
Very unlikely to ever occur.
They can't lodge a coup, no. Okay, all right, sorry.
I don't know, even the people that are on the Council of State don't look like very coup people.
Yeah.
Like, they all seem like they'd all be part of a book club.
I just like the idea of, you know, time has come, Mr. President. Just for whatever reason.
And just to add, the President of Ireland is paid approximately €350,000 a year, and they live in the Arras for their entire term.
Do their family live there as well?
Yep. When Catherine Connolly was asked who would she be bringing to the Arras with her, she said, my current husband, Brian.
Right.
Shout out Brian. And Heather Humphrey said that her husband won't be moving into the Arras because he's a farmer.
And what do they do with the place? That's what people want to know. What do they do with the house?
And like, did you see the interview with Sabina Higgins? He was like, oh, can't wait to get back to Galway.
Yeah.
She's very over it now. She wants to be out of the park.
What's the view from the north of Irish presidents? Do you think about them much?
There's a lot of, in the nationalist community especially, there's a lot of love and admiration for Michael D. Higgins, as there was for Mary McAleese, because she was from West Belfast. Doesn't play a big role in our politics. This particular president, Michael D. Higgins, was insulted by unionist politicians a number of times. Although our former health minister, Robin Swan, who is the exact same height as Michael D. Higgins, said, he looks like a man I could look in the eye. That's it for our bonus episode of A Few Scoops this week. As we said, please get out and vote tomorrow. Your vote is important. And it's just to say who you think would be best for the job. You don't have to like the person. You don't have to feel represented by the person. But it is important to vote. People fought and died for it. Go out and use it.
Well said. Do it.